but you show some cleavage or a girl in some ripped fishnets and oh my God.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Portable Trevor here, and today we have a very special guest. She has a dance group called the Cherry Bombs, and I'm going to let her explain it. I feel like she'll have a better description. Please welcome Alicia Taylor. What's going on?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Yeah, I own a dance group, performing group called the Cherry Bombs, and we're like a dance cirque type cabaret variety show that only performs to rock and metal music. It's the best way I can describe it. It's really something though that you have to kind of see to get. Even the videos don't really do it justice, but when you're there and you see it, you're like, oh, okay, I get it. So yeah, just it's a mishmash of a lot of acts, a lot of talents, all to the best music in the world. So
why rock and roll? Why not like, you know, hip hop or any of these other genres? It seems like you're really akin to like metal.
Yeah. I've always been a rock and metal fan my whole life. And It's just always been the music that's resonated with me. But I was always a dancer my whole entire life too. So I think it's really, I don't know, you just see a lot of dancers that couple their art with hip hop or with R&B or with pop music and stuff like that. So, which I like that type of music. I cherish it, but just in a different way. So for me, I wanted to combine my two favorite things, which is dance and the music that I love, and then stick them together and see how that works. And so far, so good.
That's awesome. And I feel like that's a really interesting mix, because I feel like when most people hear dance, they think of like, you know, musical theater, you know, hip hop, like Chris Brown style dancing. But for you, whenever it seems like when you think of dancing, when you hear like a rock song, are you like kind of jiving with it, thinking how you're going to do the moves to it?
Yeah. I mean, if anybody's seen our show or anything like that, they're going to know that the show is very sexy. So the moves are, you know, very, you know, there's a lot of hair, there's a lot of hips, there's a lot of movement. It's really cool. But at the same time too, I really wanted to keep it athletic. So my dancers and I are all professionally trained. And I felt that was really important. I didn't want performers to just be up there, you know, like nothing against twerking, but I wanted them to do something more difficult and harder. And I wanted our audience to be able to watch us and be like, I couldn't do that. And that's always been my goal, whether it's dance or whether it's the other more, you know, dangerous art forms that we do.
Yeah. And so my roommate, Nathan, who travels with you guys to film, shout out to Nathan, you rock. Thanks for being my roommate and teaching me about film. But I've actually edited a couple of videos for you guys, and it's just amazing what you guys can do. Like, so if you guys haven't seen their show, it's phenomenal. It's not like just dancing. It's like there's fire and they're sky high in the air doing all these crazy flips and everything. So like, how did you think to do all that instead of just, you know, typical, like, you know, moving your body? You incorporated like fire and like these sky dances.
Well, I'm definitely not the first one to come up with it. There have been groups before me, way before me. I mean, like decades before me doing this. But all these other groups, and there's been groups after me too. But all these other groups that I had seen, there was something that was missing to me that I kind of wanted to do a little differently. I wanted it to be a true combination of the two, right? So I wanted, mostly you see dance or groups like this that are heavily dance based, or you see groups like this that are heavily circ based. So like the aerial and the fire, but I never really saw a group that combined the two of them equally, in a way that they balanced each other out. So they were just as strong in one area as they were in the other. And so that's what I really wanted to create, so that everybody, meaning the audience, got the best of both worlds. So that was something I really wanted to focus on. And I really wanted to hone in on my audience and select music that I felt that they would really like. So what we ended up doing was changing our show all the time, because we would play, you know, gigs at like bike rallies. And so I would choose rock and metal music that I felt, you know, the bikers would like more. Or when we went on tour with Buckcherry and Blackstone Cherry, you know, which isn't too far off of what we were originally doing, but I chose songs that are a little different for that. And then we went on tour of Stone Sour, I flipped it and changed all the music to something I felt that audience would like. So it's been fun to kind of, you know, manipulate the show in different ways to cater to what audience we're going to be in front of. And it keeps us on our toes too. So, and keeps things really interesting.
That's cool. And that sounds intimidating, because like, I feel like for, you know, a band to, or like just a traveling band to be like, all right, guys, we're going to change up our set, that sounds intimidating, and let alone like dancing. Like, so how do you do that?
Well, it is. I'm thankful and very lucky that all of my performers are really professional, and they know everything that they do front to back. Because there have been many times where we've walked into a show and I'm like, oh shit, and we have to change it right then and there. I can't tell you how many times when we go on tour, when we're on a different city or a different venue at each stop, where we will walk into the venue and look at it, and it is something different than what was advanced, you know, prior to arriving there. So sometimes we walk into a venue and we're like, oh shit, we can't rig here like they said we could, or we can rig here like they said we couldn't. And so all of my performers are so amazing and so professional that I can be like, okay, guys, we're throwing this in, we're doing this. And they're like, all right, we got it. They're so well rehearsed. I mean, we used to rehearse 2 times a week, every week, year round, gig or not, didn't matter. And that's how dedicated everyone was. And it really kept us, you know, fresh and on top of it. And I could even flip the music like right when we got there, and they'd be like, all right, we got it. And it's just, it's really rad to have that kind of commitment, you know?
What's the most like last minute change you've had so far?
Fuck. honestly, okay. So our first tour was with Buckcherry and Black Center, our first actual national tour. And I remember calling their tour manager, Buckcherry's tour manager at the time, and being like, hi, my name is Alicia, and we're going to be touring with you guys. Just want to, you know, let you know what we are, because we're kind of a different act. This is what we are, and this is what we do. And I sent him some videos, and he's like, what are you talking about? You have a show? And I was like, yeah, we have a show. And he's like, I thought you guys were just like going to go-go dance like in between the bands to house music. And I was like,
what?
No. So he was like, I don't have any time for you. And I was like, okay. So I like let it simmer for a second. And I was like, okay, well, like, let's circle back in a week and game plan this. Cause there's already like 3 bands on the bill at the time. So first show day comes around, and luckily it's in Atlanta, Georgia, up there at, what's that venue? 37. It's an old venue. I think it closed down. 37 Main.
The Masquerade.
No. It's up in Alpharetta.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. I don't know the name. Okay.
It was like a rock venue that popped up, and I think it might be closed now. Mm-hmm. But we had performed there before, and so they were really familiar with us, luckily. So the tour manager walks up to me, and he's like, listen, you girls can have 5 minutes, you can have 10 minutes, or you can have 12 minutes, and that's it. And I will be the one to tell you which set you're going to do on which day. And I was like, okay. You know, like, when you're an opening act on a tour like that, you have to be flexible. You know, you're just thankful for the opportunity. So I was like, okay. So I like grab all the girls, and we sit down in a booth in the venue, and I'm like editing music really fast. And I'm like, okay, here's our 5 minute set, and here's our 10 minute set, and here's our 12 minute set, and that's it. But we had a 30 minute show planned. And,
oh, man.
And, I told the TM, I was like, okay, so he gave us a 5 minute set that day. And that was enough time to do one dance and one like really short fire eating routine, because it was a smaller venue. Mm-hmm. He was like, you can't do fire here. And I was like, yes, we can. Like, we've advanced.
Part of our act.
It's part of our act, yeah. And he was like, it's dangerous. And I was like, trust me. And the venue owners, luckily, by the fucking, I don't know, the universe just aligned, and they were like, we know the Cherry Bombs, they're good, let them do their fire thing, they've done it here before, we trust them. So the team was like, okay, so it's our time to go up for a 5 minute set. And And we go and we do the damn thing. And the TM comes up to me after and he's like, holy shit, I get it now. You're like Broadway. And I was like, yeah.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah. He's like, I got it. We're going to help you. We're going to make this happen. So I was like, okay. So the next venue we get to was like in Washington, D.C. or something like that. And we could rig there. And we were like, yes, there's beautiful theater, super high, like 30-foot ceilings, I think it was. So my aerialist, Connie, was like, yeah, I get to hang. And the TM was like, no, you can't do aerial. You know, same thing. It's dangerous. And so it was like every show we had to prove ourselves, you know, and what we could do and what we were capable of to kind of earn our stripes, I guess, and earn the trust of people in this industry. And yeah, so I mean, it was a fight the whole way, but you know, being able to think on our feet like that, it's worth it, you know?
Yeah, somebody commented at 37 Main Buford.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Buford. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, actually, that's my dad. So what's up, Dad?
Oh, hi, Dad.
So you do this like crazy show, and do you, or is it hard to like book your venue since your act is so different? It's not a musical act or anything.
It is,
but you're not playing instruments or anything.
Yeah. No, it definitely is tough because, you know, like I said, when we first started, we were really flexible. Like we just wanted to play any venue that we could. We didn't care. We'll work with it. If we can't do fire, fine. We're going to give you a badass dance and aerial show. If we can't do aerial, you're going to get a badass dance and fire show. We can't do anything, if we can just dance, you're going to get a badass dance show. So we really, you know, worked at it that way. But now that we're a little more established and a little bit more well-known and people know what to expect when we come in their venues. And not only that, our audience is a little more used to us and the things that they see on YouTube and stuff. So that's the thing that they're expecting to see, right? So now we've kind of shifted and I've moved us to where if we can't do our full show, meaning all the acts, I don't want to do the show anymore, because I want to be able to give that audience the thing that they're expecting to see. Mm-hmm. And so right now that's really important to me. So luckily I got teamed up with a badass agent and he knows all the venues across the country and what they're capable of. And so when we booked our tour that isn't happening this, you know, in May. We're able to go ahead and do everything in all those venues. That's pretty cool. So we're really, really grateful for that.
That's awesome. Can you tell me about like, you know, staying in this quarantine, because that's like your job is to perform. So you not being able to go on tour, does that suck or how are you dealing with
it? Oh my God, it's awful. Yeah, it sucks. I mean, and I think it rings true for everybody, really. Mm. We're all missing the things that we love to do, if that means they're being done outside of our house. So yeah, I miss performing. I miss being in shape.
You're not in shape anymore?
Girl, I've been eating everything in sight, like everything in my fridge. I'm like, oof, your girl gonna be real healthy when she leaves this home. So
I don't think you're alone there, because I think even I'm struggling to be healthy. I made my first healthy meal in like 4 days
tonight. Yeah, did it have green? Was it green?
A little bit. It was like, had a little bit of broccoli, carrots.
There you go.
Some chicken. So I'm trying to be healthy.
It's not so much that I'm eating shit food. It's more like I'm just eating out of boredom. Like trying to keep busy, but then I'm like, oh, what's that dip in the fridge doing? And I'm just going to go eat it. So,
what are some of your guilty pleasure meals?
Oh God. So, right now I talked about this in another interview I did. It's called this Bitchin' Sauce, and it's, you can get it at Costco, and it's made out of all almonds. So it's an almond based dip, which means it's, you know, got a lot of fat in it, but it's so good. And it comes in so many different flavors, but the one I've been eating the fuck out of really is the Chipotle one. You get it with these tortilla chips and you just dip it in there. But there's a Bombay one that's like an Indian flavored one. And if you like Indian food, there's a cilantro one that's really good. There's a hot one that I really love because I love spicy stuff. The original is okay. It's kind of bland, but the chipotle, the hot, the Bombay, and the cilantro are definitely where it's at for sure.
So you're all about dips.
Oh, I love a dip. Yeah, I love a dip. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Pizza, but I haven't had pizza in a while. Corey was buying. I love my husband so much, but he like doesn't do moderation very well. So when he like is into something, he's like really into it. Right. So he found this chocolate chip cookie dough and he bought like three things of it from Costco and they're like massive. And it's the kind of chocolate chip cookie dough that you can eat straight, like as dough.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what are you doing? Like, what are you
That's
doing?
Dangerous.
Dad? Oh, it was so dangerous. I tell him, I was like, stop this. Cause we can't, if it's not in the house, we won't eat it. So let's just not do that anymore.
It's like, so what have you and Corey, what have you and Corey been doing for fun to like entertain yourselves?
Well, we run around our neighborhood. It's about a mile loop. So we run.
So you are in shape.
I mean, in shape, yes, but I don't feel like I look like it. So, by performing standards, no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, run still, yes.
So you guys run. What else do you do?
We run. We play guitar together. We cook together. We bounce ideas off each other for the next things that we're working on. So, you know, he's tinkering around with his new book idea and some music stuff, and his movie stuff. And I'm working on this new show and things that I want to change about it. What else? We've been watching The Last Dance.
Oh, me and Nathan have been watching that. It's so good.
We just started it. And before that we were all about the Obsolete Oddity, series on YouTube. And then of course Tiger King, and then Dark Side of the Ring and stuff like that. So, yeah, but The Last Dance, man, we just started it yesterday. We finished on the Scottie Pippen, episode. Yeah. And so we'll pick back up tonight, but I'm just sucked in, man. It's brutal.
It's such a good story. And the fact that they have all this crazy footage just makes it better.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And I love that they had all that footage from back then and they're able to show that today, you know, so many years later. It's just, it's really cool to give a glimpse into what it was like, you know, right as they were living all of that through that year.
Yeah, me and Nathan aren't even like huge basketball fans, but it's just such a good story.
Yeah.
That's what like sucks you in.
Yeah, for sure. Like whether you dig the sport or not, it's just a great human story of, you know, this person that's kind of larger than life in every sense of the word. I just, you know, when they were showing video footage of him as like a kid and the letter that he wrote to his mom when he was in college, Michael Jordan, it was so sweet. And I was just like, what a cool dude, you know, even from a kid, you know, teenagers generally aren't like that, you know? So it's really cool.
Yeah. Like I played soccer and when I was in high school and I was like not driven to do that at all. I was just like, man, I just want to like do creative stuff. And like, I mean, I was never like the best at everything that I did. So the fact that someone that was the best at what they did and like strive to be the best is just so cool to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that too. I always really love that about people when they're, I don't care what it is that you do. I don't care if, you know, if you drive a truck for a living or if you deliver pizza for a living or if you, you know, are some crazy business mogul. I don't care what you do. I want you to be the best at it. Like to me, that is just the coolest thing in the world is when somebody takes something that they love and do or just do and they're like, I'm going to crush this. I love that. I feed off of that. I just think it's just, and when I'm feeling like sluggish, like I don't really feel like that, you know, tap into people like that. And that's just, it's really important to have people like that around you, you know?
Yeah. And for you, do you think it's better to be the best at something or the most different? Because it feels like That's kind of what the Cherry Bombs is. It's just like, you guys, you just wanted to do something that was different. And you also seem like you're striving to be the best at it too.
Yeah. But the Cherry Bombs, it really started out as something that I just wanted to do my way. It was kind of a selfish project in a way. Mm-hmm. Because I have so much love for rock and metal music and a passion for performing, that in my own kind of, you know, selfish way, I really wanted to just do what I wanted to do. And then if you want to come do it too, come on. Or if you want to watch it, cool. And then whoever wants to be here can be here. And then, you know, the goal kind of shifted as it caught on to, you know, let's be the craziest, the wildest, the most, you know, daring. You know, I want people to be like, what the fuck is that? You know, and so it kind of shifted to that. And so sometimes I think, and I think this is true with a lot of brands and bands and anyone kind of finding themselves in what they do or their art or as a person, you start out one way and you can kind of like, you know, discover different ways and means of going about things. And so you kind of test this over here and see how it goes, or you test that over here, whether it's, you know, a way you go about approaching something, or, you know, from a brand aspect, the way something looks, or the way that you market something, you know. So that's all kind of a trial and error process when you're doing something new, kind of like what I was doing. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think you need to be great at what you do all the time. I think when you show up, you need to be the best. You know, when you show up, you got to show up every time, every day. And I also think you need to constantly be evolving and adapting to things that are new and coming at you, and trying new and pushing new boundaries and trying out new things, ever evolving, you know?
Yeah, that's rad. So you have a documentary series called Girl Gang, and it like kind of documents everything that you guys do. And again, shout out to Nathan, because that series rules. So tell me about doing that documentary series. And I also want to hear about, because you say you started out as a cheerleader and you kind of were like tired of it. So that's what like made, like inspired you to do the Cherry Bombs. Was that like rebellion?
Kind of.
I probably got the story wrong, but I.
No. No. When I definitely, Cherry Bombs was definitely like a spark out of that. And I like that you use the term rebellion, because it definitely kind of felt that way. When I was a cheerleader, we were very controlled. We were told, you know, how our hair was going to be, what we could say and do, not just, you know, publicly, but also privately. And, you know, on social media, we had to adhere to a very strict set of rules. It was just a lot of rules. However, you know, when you go into that, you know that, and you sign a contract that says all those things. So it's not a surprise. Mm-hmm. So I loved it for what it was. It was really great. I made lifetime friendships out of that. But after 3 years of it, I was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. And shortly after I left, I noticed there were a lot of lawsuits popping up between cheerleaders and the organizations, because apparently a lot of other cheerleaders at the time were feeling the same way. You know, you made little to no money and you were expected to, you know, be at their beck and call year round all the time. It's definitely, you know, not for the lighthearted, as far as dedication goes. You have to be extremely dedicated to it. It does, though, open up tons of doors for you. It teaches you invaluable things. I carry with me today, you know, in regards to business and how to conduct yourself in certain situations and stuff. So there are things that I'm very grateful for. But I just don't, you know, the way I felt about it was like, I have one mother, I don't need two more. So I just wanted to be a little more rebellious, like you said, and be like, you know what, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want. And I want to do it in my way. And I want to have a lot of fun. And I want to take care of my girls. I want to be able to pay them. And, you know, I just want us to be rad and have fun and have a blast and do what we want on the road, man, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. And what would you say, like, you said you, like, learned a lot of valuable things. What would you say is, like, the most valuable thing you learned, like, while you were a cheerleader?
I'm still, like, really old-fashioned in some ways. Like, I send thank you notes. I know that's so lame.
No, I think that's awesome.
But, like, there's a part of me that really believes in and you know, being polite. And I think we've lost a lot of that kind of decency in the way that we talk to one another and the way that we treat one another. So it's really important to me to show people that I work with that they matter and that I'm grateful for the opportunity rather than it's something like I'm owed or, you know, I'm here, so here I am, you know? And so I think that's something like as simple as like a thank you note. And that's why, like, when people buy my merch, I also send thank you notes in my merch, like I handwrite them.
That's
because,
awesome.
Because I think it's important to make people understand that you appreciate things. So yeah, stuff like that, you know?
What are you going to do when you just get like a million merch orders? Are you just going to like do a million thank you notes?
Yeah. So I'm kind of there. I haven't pushed my merch during this pandemic because I don't feel right about pushing like things, non-essential things when everyone's hurting, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but before this all happened, I was talking with a couple people and taking over my merch sales because I just can't do it anymore. Because I travel a lot, and when I'm with Corey on the road too, I can't get to them, and then orders get backed up and I'm having some international shipping issues. So it's just becoming a lot. So I think what I'm going to end up doing probably is like print out a thank you card and then I'll just sign them all really fast. Because I can do that instead of like, thank you so much for your da 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 da, you know? But print out like a more like generic thank you note and then I'll just sign it. So, cause it is a lot.
I mean, the fact that you're handwriting something that like says so much, cause I can't tell you how many things I've bought. I don't think I've ever gotten like a handwritten thank you. Like even if it just said thanks, like I would be blown away if I ever ordered something. And
yeah, I
got
feel
that.
Like that too. Like if I order something off Etsy or whatever, and generally that stuff is all handmade, right? So,
right.
Whenever they send you like a really cute thank you note, I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. I don't keep it, but I think it's really sweet, you know? And it's just something that kind of makes me remember them. So I want to make other people feel that way too.
Yeah. And to go back to Girl Gang. So Nathan kind of like followed you guys on tour. And so what was that like experience like just being on tour with all these bands and just rocking out every night and just being on the road? What is that experience like?
It's fun. It's a blast. Tour is like, you know, the goal. I think for really any act or band, tour is just fun because you get to bring your show to a new city every night and new people every night. And you get to check out new cities and see what's around town and get a feel for different people all around you. And I think that's kind of what we're all after as traveling artists, right? And just the thrill of like jumping into a vehicle together. Well, our first tour, we were in a van and I drove. We had no crew. It was six girls, one van, and we just hopped in and we just hit the road, and it was hard. Not a lot of sleep, a lot of shitty hotels, but like that's what you do, right? Like you gotta earn it. And the bands that you travel with, they really do become like your road family because you're around each other every day, you're on each other every night. So I think with a lot of touring bands and as far as like tours go, when you have multiple bands on a bill, it's really important to develop that sense of like team, like where we'll help a band if we can, and they end up helping us too, and we watch their shows in support, and they end up watching ours too. I've heard of tours happen where bands don't even talk to one another at all during the entire run. And I think that's so, you know, bizarre, but I mean, I guess people don't want to socialize, that's fine. But we're so like, hi, we're the Cherry Bombs. Nice to meet you. We want to meet, we want to know the people that we're working with, you know, we want to say hi. So yeah, it's so much fun. And I mean, I don't know if you've ever like performed before. Are you in a band or do you?
I did theater in high school. Does that count?
Okay. So yeah, so you can relate to it. So, you know, whenever you like have something practiced and you have it down so well that when you perform it, it becomes second nature, and then you can have fun with it, right? Like, because you're not thinking about, oh, what do I gotta do? So when you're on tour, you're doing it so much and so often that you can have so much fun together on that stage, and the audience can feel that too. So I think that's what makes a really good show. But really long-winded way of saying it's fun.
No, that's like that's a great response. And what are some of the bands that you've been on tour with?
We've only done two national tours, but we've gone out with Buck Cherry, Blackstone Cherry, and then Stone Sour and Steel Panther.
That's awesome. What's Steel Panther like? Because I'm a pretty big fan of them.
They're everything you think they are and more.
I hope. Are they funny?
Oh my God. The funniest. They are so much fun. Just rad dudes. Super chill. They like to golf. They're fun. they're super sweet. So because we went on that tour with them, and they were so gracious to let us on that show that Nathan filmed for Girl Gang season one, which we're working on season two right now. But Steel Panther, you know, we needed a band to jump on with to do a showcase for this, you know, prospective manager that wanted to look at us. He was like, I didn't sign anybody that I know that I haven't seen perform. So we're like, okay, what show can we jump on so you can see us perform to sign us? And we saw that Steel Panther show in Atlanta at the Buckhead Theater. And we were like, hey man, like, can you do us a really big favor? And they were so awesome in letting us come and jump on that show. And I won't give too much away for anybody that hasn't seen Girl Gang, but it was wild. Yeah.
What are some backstage stories that you have with like Steel Panther, or just in general, like what are some of your fondest memories from those?
So backstage is not, maybe if this were like 1986, it would be a different story. But I took a video one time of like backstage. It's a lot of like this.
Just playing on your phone.
Yeah. Yeah. It really isn't like anything like crazy and wild. It's just a bunch of people just being like, sup, how's it going? Oh, is that celery and ranch? Thanks. You know, or I need a mirror space. Can you like scoot over so I can curl my hair? I'm sure Steel Panther sounds like that too, but, you know, it's really not like this crazy wild thing. Backstage is pretty quiet. And, you know, my girls and I, we're usually back on the bus and in bed by 11.
We're like that adult life.
We're tired. Yeah. Oh yeah.
I would be too if I did what you guys did.
Right. Yeah. Like we're like, fuck, man, I'm exhausted. Plus, I don't know. I'm 35. I can't hang late at night anymore like I used to.
How many shows a day would you say you could do, or how long could you perform before you're like, okay, I'm done? Like, what's like the longest that you would do before you're like, all right, it's over?
You mean like hang it up, like retire?
No. Like in one sitting, like, well, just do like one, like huge show.
A lot of times with people who book us, they're like, hey, can you do a 3-hour show? And I'm like, can you run around your coffee table for 3 hours? Because that's what that's like. So what we do is so physical. I mean, we're moving. We're like rolling on the ground. We're coming up. And then if we're not on that stage, we're like frantically changing really fast to get back out there and do the next thing. So, you know, there's no point in time where anybody's like on stage, just standing there, like looking around. So it's exhausting. With that said, I've had to create an hour and a half show to do a headlining run, which was the run that we were going to do in May. It was our first headlining run ever. So I had to do a proper hour and a half show, which is really hard for a group of, you know, I had it written for 8 performers, and that's a lot. So I try and give breaks in rest, meaning like I'll have 5 performers on stage and then 2 are in the wings or 3 are in the wings to wait. And then those 5 come off and then those 3 come on, or maybe 2 go on. And then the one who's been resting for 2 numbers now can come on. So it's a lot of like, you know, finagling and figuring out the flow of everything. Cause you're like, okay, can I give this girl an adequate time? Is she going to be doing something really dangerous coming up? So she needs to be well rested and not tired or muscle fatigued in order to hang, you know, 30 feet in the air. So, or is she going to be eating fire so she can't be out of breath, because that's dangerous. That kind of thing you have to just keep in mind when I build a show and I'm moving people around. So yeah, an hour and a half is so far going to be our longest show, and we'll see how that goes whenever we get to it.
So like, music is a really important part of your show. Like, how do you like pick the songs and like what dance moves to do with it and everything? Like, what goes in, what's the process of, you know, actually putting together a show and being like, I want this song here, I want to close with this song? Like, how does that happen?
Yeah. Well, generally I take the audience into consideration. Like when we open for a band, I take that audience into consideration and I build the show based on what I think that audience would like to hear. Mm-hmm. With our headlining run, it's a little bit different, right? So, because we're the headliner, so it can be whatever we want. So when I was building that show, I was like, okay, what kind of, I like to use the word texture a lot when it comes to music. I like music or shows that have, you know, it goes like this, like it comes out with a bang and then it comes down a little bit and then it comes back up. It's kind of like a movie, right? And then it'll end on like a nice high note with a bunch of stuff going on at the end. So I think about songs that have that kind of feel. But what's been interesting with this new show that I'm building is it has a storyline. And so I've been picking songs that I feel kind of fit the mood of the storyline. It's not like so directly correlated that it's cheesy, you know, where, I don't know, for example, like
you're not being literal with like what you're
doing. Yeah. Yeah. Like it's not literal, but it's more of like a mood. So when you're watching it, you're like, oh, okay, I get it. So, so that's been an entirely different thing for me and challenge for me as a producer in building this kind of show, where I'm like, okay, here's my storyline. And I wrote it out in an outline of what's happening throughout the show and how it ends. And now what music would pair well with what's happening on stage. So, and then we go in our lab, which is a dance studio, and we make
the
it
lab.
The lab. Yep. Go in the lab and we create a visual experience for you to convey that storyline, that I wrote.
Nice. And what kind of songs do you guys play or dance to
in this new one?
Yeah.
It is.
Or can you give it away?
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, you know what? I haven't even told anybody what the storyline is. But this show, I wanted it to be for people who are just a rock and roll fan. Like if you're just a fan of rock music, I hope, I feel, I think you're going to really like the show. It has things like the Blasters in it. It's got Rob Zombie in it. It's got Metallica in it, and kind of a funky twist with Metallica. It has Rammstein in it. So some, you know, some heavier stuff. And it's got a really cool mix of the Sneaker Pimps, Spin Spin Sugar in it. So a kind of little bit of a throwback feel. I was listening to some Tom Waits the other day, and I think I'm going to throw a Tom Waits song in there. So I'm really excited about that. So yeah, it's just a weird potpourri, if you will, of rock music all over the place. And I love that. It's really interesting. I've never done anything like it. So I'm really excited. It could be a total failure, but
I doubt it. From what I've seen, I think you're capable of anything.
Yeah.
That's cool. But so is it a collaboration with all of your girls, or is it mostly like from your head?
No, this one's from my head. Well, yes and no. So I came up with this theory, this whole storyline, and I wrote it all out. And when it comes to the individual pieces, like the actual choreography, I'll team up with other people and we'll all create stuff together. Or, you know, with like my aerialist, Connie, I'll tell her what I'm looking for and what kinds of moves I'm looking for. And she'll show me options and then we like pick it together. So at a certain point, it does definitely become a collaborative effort. But starting out, I'm kind of just figuring all out and all the map work of what I want it to look like. And then we go from there. So, and I love collaborating with my girls because they're geniuses. Like everybody is their own genius in a different way. And I love like hearing new ideas and them when they contribute, they're more invested in it and they feel like they have more fun with it because it's not somebody just being like, hey, you have to do this and you have to do that. Like they feel like, you know, I did this because I helped, you know? And so I want people to be proud of it too. So, and I want to listen to their ideas as well.
That's cool. Yeah. So was your girl gang, were they like your friends or did you like have them audition? Like how did that go?
My girl gang is always changing. I kind of have a rotating group, if you will, because I've had a roster of girls that have come and gone. Some have stayed, some have moved on to other things. So how I book a show is that, you know, I have this show in mind and then I send a blast email out to everybody and I say, here's the gig, here's the pay, here are the skills that I'm looking for. I need like this many dancers or an aerialist or pole dancer or fire artists or here, this, that. And then they start shooting emails back to me. I'm available. I can do this. I'm here. And then I, you know, work the show out based on who's in it. Some shows that you go to where it's these girls, and then some shows will have different girls in it. When I moved to Vegas, I really wanted to hone the company in more. So right now I'm more focused on Las Vegas, you know, residents to be in the company because I found that it was really hard to do gigs with people spread out all over the country. Because what was happening was we weren't able to rehearse together as much as we were when we were all located in Atlanta together, right? Mm-hmm. So then one girl moved over here and another girl moved over here and we're all over the country. And so we weren't staying as fresh as we were like before, you know, when we were rehearsing all the time together. And it just made things really difficult to me. The show wasn't as good as it could have been. So I think right now moving forward, I really just want to focus on a Las Vegas Central group that can be together, rehearse together, you know, really become like a unit, a team so that we can go do those gigs really fast and it looks good and it looks clean and it looks, and there's no bumps, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever miss Atlanta?
Honestly, I love my people in Atlanta. I do not miss that traffic.
I don't think anyone living here likes it.
Nope. I do not miss the allergies that I had when I was there. I mean, things bloom there that are like, oh, I would be sick.
Yeah, the South is really bad whenever it comes
to spring. Yeah, for sure. Atlanta was good to me and I really love it, but I think that chapter has passed and Vegas is where I'm supposed to be. I love it here. I really do.
That's awesome. So what do you think is the biggest difference between like, you know, the South and like you over on like the West Coast? What do you think is the biggest difference?
Oh, well, You know, I'm not from Atlanta originally. I wasn't raised there. I was raised in Seattle. So being a Pacific Northwesterner and going, you know, and I went to college in Hawaii, and then going to the South was kind of a culture shock in some ways. I think I didn't fit in a lot there, especially when I was on the cheerleading team too. I just noticed that I was a little bit more different than everyone else. I felt like I didn't really fit in anywhere, but you know, I wasn't a sorority girl, which seems to be really popular in the South, like college football, college teams, right? Like the SEC, all that stuff. And so on top of that, also, you know, loving the music that I do. And I think anybody that loves rock and metal can kind of understand what it means when I say that it really is like a lifestyle, right? So you go to these like metal shows, I go to Masquerade or whatever. And there's just a type of energy there. There's just a real chill atmosphere. And we're just kind of like a different breed, you know? So I never really felt like I had a place there. And I just couldn't find it, I don't think. So I really like the laid backness of the West Coast. Just how like more chill everyone is here. Maybe it was the circles I was running in Atlanta, but I felt really judged for the things that I liked, the things I was into. Like I always had the most tattoos on the cheerleading team. I always had to cover them up. So they were like a bunch of like little ones all over me. But when I left cheerleading and I started working on my sleeve and I dyed my hair red, you know, people were like, oh, is Alicia on drugs? Or, you know, should we add her to our prayer list? And so it was just, I just felt like there wasn't really a place for me there, you know? So, but yeah, so it was just time to move. But yeah, but like I said, I still have friends there. When I go, I still find all my favorite restaurants. So
what are some of your favorites? Because I'm still looking for some to hit up.
Well, Tin Lizzie's, come on. So good.
I've not been there.
You've never been to Tin Lizzie?
So tomorrow actually marks my 1 year here in Atlanta. And I still have not like ventured out, I feel like. So whenever the quarantine is lifted or whatever, which it is here in Georgia, but I don't think we should, you know, listen to it. That's a whole different topic, but I need to find more restaurants.
Yeah, no, go to Tin Lizzie. Go check out the Porter down in Little Five Points.
Okay.
Vortex. It's really good for burgers.
I've been there. I have been there.
Okay. Yeah, just all those little, there's a Mexican restaurant that my friends and I used to always go to called Cielo Blue down there in Smyrna. And it's really, really, really good.
Ooh, because we live in Marietta, so that's not too far away.
Yeah, there.
Yeah. So you were talking about, you know, being here, you felt really judged. And so with starting the Cherry Bombs and everything, how have you, I imagine like you've handled a lot of criticism over the years that you, since you started this, like how have you like handled that? Do you like shove it off or has it ever like bothered you?
Oh my gosh. Well, yes, there's a lot of criticism. For some reason, man, people have a really hard time with like sexuality in this country. Like it is just, we can, you know, watch TV and watch people get their brains blown off. That's fine. But you show some cleavage or a girl in some ripped fishnets and oh my God, fucking sound the alarm. This is too much, you know? And so that I think is a very cultural thing in our country. So having that, I mean, things are changing. Yes. And that's great. So that was kind of hard to bust out in doing that. And then I think the thing that I really wanted to lead with, so I was like, okay, if we're going to be super sexy, and that's great. And I think that there's a place for that anywhere and everywhere and can be appreciated in its own way. I wanted to be more than that. So I wanted to do something that was more than just sexy. I think sexiness has a place in our lives. It's how sex is how we, you know, keep our race going, right? Our human race going. And it's how we survive. So it's just, it's a very natural thing. And so when I started doing this, I was like, okay, I don't want to be like this ultra Puritan, like, oh, we're going to cover and shun ourselves. But I also didn't want to be so offensive that, you know, we were trying to shock everybody or anything like that. I wanted to embrace sexuality and allow my performers to do whatever it is that they wanted to do. But at the same time, I wanted them to be doing something that was difficult, that was physically demanding, that, you know, showed skill, discipline. So it's something just more than that. And so I think that's kind of what has helped us win audiences over. It was like, okay, sure, it can be beautiful girls or, you know, women just doing their thing on stage, and that's fine. But the question I want to ask and I want to push my performers to answer is, what can you do? What can you do with this great body? It should be athletic. It should be, you know, praised for the things that it can do. Your body's an amazing thing. It's a vessel that can do all these awesome things. Use it. And that's kind of been the way that we've found we can kind of reach people. And I think that people find that they can dig about us. So it's not just like this thing that we can be like, oh. Now, of course, there's always going to be people that are like, oh, it's just a bunch of sluts or strippers. Or, I mean, I've heard all of that since I was a cheerleader. It's a bunch of strippers. And you're like, really, really, Carol, are these, what kind of strip clubs do you go to? I would love to know. Nothing like strippers. Love y'all girls. Get it, girl. But I want to know what kind of strip club you're going to where women are dangling from the ceiling and breathing fire and, you know, doing flips on stage and doing like all these crazy things with 7 hula hoops. Well, take me to that strip club. That sounds like fun.
So, for real. I think what's funny is like, you guys are doing all these crazy stunts, and instead of people going like, wow, people are going, how dare they? They're wearing fishnets.
Right. And you're like, really? That's what you took from it? So it's when you take a step back and you look at it for what it is, I think the thing that you have to realize, and I've struggled with it. Anybody that's followed me knows, you have to kind of understand that people are going to see you the way that they want to see you. So if, you know, Charlene from the Finger Lakes wants to see me as this big old slut, then that's how she's going to see me. And it doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter what I say. That's how she wants to view me. And so that's her problem. So I'm battling that with what I do hasn't really been difficult. I think it was much harder for me when I got with Corey, and then it was like in bigger waves. So it wasn't just like what I do. Then my character was being attacked, and that was a really tough thing. Because my integrity is something that's really important to me. So being accused of, you know, being a user or being with somebody for gain or gold digger or just, you know, the list goes on and on and on sucks, because you're like, fuck you, man. You've never even met me. And it's one person is fine, but when it comes in like giant waves, like as it did in the beginning, it was really tough, man.
Yeah. So what did you do during those times? Did you talk to Corey about it?
Yeah. He's always been really great and supportive, and he's always listened to me. And I think it's been hard for him because he's dealt with it for 20 years. And so to him, it's like, it wasn't anything new. He's used to criticism, and he's used to people talking shit and all this stuff. And so for me, it was a very new thing to have it happen to the degree that it was. So it was like this big change. And I think it was kind of hard for him to relate, but you know, he would listen, and he was always a good shoulder to lean on, and he was always really understanding. And so, yeah, it was just, it was tough. And, you know, I went to therapy over it. Really? I left social media. Yeah. I was like, it was such, it's just, it's hard to explain. It's like a very isolating feeling. But I had to kind of figure out how to cope with all of that just coming in, like I said, in those big waves. So, but yeah, I left social media for, I don't know, a few months, because it was just, it was so bad. But
do you think that helped, or do you think you needed that break?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely needed that break. And you see it. You see it with other people. I mean, hell, you see it with, you know, regular everyday people, not just public figures. You see people be like, I got to unplug, you know? I think that social media has taken away so much like social decency from people that people now feel like they can say whatever they want, do whatever they want. And there's no retaliation, or, you know, there's no repercussion for that. Whereas before, you know, back in the day, you know, you talk shit, you get hit. And now anybody can hide behind a keyboard. And I'm just not talking about like from my experience is a little different. It wasn't just like, oh, you suck, or you're ugly, or you're fat, or, you know, you're slut. Like, that's fine, whatever. I was more talking about, like, I've had people create multiple accounts over and over and over and over, like over 50 accounts, over 75 accounts, like the same people, and they just don't give up. And then they go after my family, they go after my friends, they go after people I work with, they go after my dancers and tell them not to work with me. Like, the shit's wild, man. So, yeah. Yeah, it's just really bizarre. So that's really what did it. And I really needed to like take a step back. I figured, okay, if I go away, then they can't do anything. There's nothing for them to do, right? Mm-hmm. They're not wrong. They still kept at it after the people that I love. And so I've had to really just, you know, tell my friends and family to just ignore it. And, you know, they're annoyed, but they get it. And just kind of, you know, let it happen. It sucks, but I mean, what are you going to do? You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just so wild to me that somebody would go like, have you ever made just a social media account? It takes like at least 5 minutes out of your day. So like 70 times 5 minutes. And that's just baffling to me that somebody would work that hard to go after you and your family. That's like on a different planet, that type of behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. And it by no means is typical. Like, it's very few and far between, but I'll never understand it. I will never like understand that mindset. I don't think I've ever even like left a shitty remark on like anybody's page. Now that I think about it, like, I don't go to like Kim Kardashian's page and like, oh, you fucking whore. Like, I don't know. That's just, it's wild to me, that kind of mentality. I don't know.
I've gotten one negative comment in my entire life, and it was in middle school when I used to upload my old YouTube channel. And it's still like, sometimes I like think about it and I'm like, I still have no idea what that guy meant. But this dude commented and said, you're gay, Saketh. I have no idea what Saketh is. And it just said, you're gay. And in middle school and in the South, like, that's a huge insult. So like, it was just right. Like, what does this mean? But other than that, like, I've never gotten that. So I can't imagine what you're going through.
It's, I mean, well, okay. So like, there's some that honestly, the best way I found to cope with it is you got to joke about it. Like, you just got to like, you just got to laugh about it. You got to find some humor in it. And at the end of the day, you got to realize someone is like sitting in their mom's basement, pounding away on their keyboard, and they're screenshotting. How many pictures of you do they have in their phone and taking up all that memory in their phone for them to post and make fun of? Like, that's a fan. That's not a hater. That's a fan. That's someone who loves you. Once you look at it like that, you're like, whoa, that's kind of crazy.
You're so obsessed with me that you would take up so much memory in your phone. That's so nice of you.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the way you got to kind of look at it. But you see, like, you know, teenagers in high school deal with this stuff. And it's really sad, man. You hear about kids committing suicide over it. And it's just, it can go to a really dark place if you don't have somebody to talk to about it or a way to cope with it. So if anybody out there is watching, like, if any, you know, if anybody's getting bullied or harassed or whatever, find someone to talk to, find a way to find the humor in it, you know, send it to your friends in a group chat and all of you make fun of it. Do whatever it is you can to just, you know, deal with it and find, and it doesn't make it right, but it's a way that I found that works a lot. So yeah, it's just a wild time. It would be tough to be a teenager in these days.
I agree. I'm glad I didn't grow up with it.
Yeah.
Or at least at the level it's at now.
Yeah.
Cause I'm 26. So I kind of grew up with the internet sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a baby. Yeah.
I'm a wee baby. So, to go back to, it seems like you and Corey have a great relationship. How's that been going for you since, you guys like have started, you guys got married recently and seems like you guys are having a blast being together.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's just the best human ever. And when I say that, I really mean it. He is, and I'm not just saying that cause he's my husband. I mean, he really is the best human. He is kind. He's an amazing father. He's an incredible friend. He's a kick-ass bandmate. He's just there for everyone in his circle. And, you know, he's there when they need him and he's supportive and he's genuine. I mean, in our industry, you don't see that a lot. And I was kind of leery of it when we first met. I was like, there's no way this guy is like, you know, he's just a Rico Suave smooth talker. But he really is that good, like in here. And he's incredibly intelligent. So we could sit and talk about things for hours about anything. And it's just really fun to hear his thoughts on it. I mean, everybody hears what Corey Taylor thinks anyway. So,
I saw that's in your bio. So you hear what Corey Taylor thinks more than anyone else.
Yeah. Cause that's like the meme, right? Mm-hmm. But he's just, and he's a lot of fun. He's a big old goober. We can sit there and laugh and laugh and laugh. And it's just, he's a blast. I not only love him, but I like him. And I think that's so important when you're with somebody, you have to like each other, you know, as people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's awesome. How did you guys meet? I feel like you may have told this story 100 times on the internet or somewhere, but I've not heard.
Yeah. We've been like acquaintances since like 2011 ish, 11, 12 ish. Mm-hmm. And so with Stone Sour, so this is back in my Atlanta Falcon cheerleader days.
And before you go any further, for anyone that has, that doesn't know, Alicia's husband is Corey Taylor, lead singer of Slipknot. So just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. Continue. Yeah. It's weird, right? To like assume people, but I used to go to Stone Sour shows because I was an Atlanta Falcons cheerleader and my concert buddy, best friend, worked at the head office up at Atlanta Falcons. So he and the guitarist would like trade favors of the guitarist would be like, hey, you want to come to Stone Sour shows? And my friend would be like, hey, you want to come to Atlanta Falcons games? And they would go like this, and I would just be there for Jay to hang out with. And so that's how we like were introduced, but we never really talked. And then when I started Cherry Bombs, videos of us started kind of circulating around like people in our industry. And I saw him again and he was like, aren't you that girl that runs that dance group that just did the tour and stuff? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, that's super rad. Super cool. So we started talking about like what I do and all this sort of things. And then we kind of left it at that. And then fast forward to like early springtime 2017, he reached out to me. He's like, hey, I know you're doing really big things with the Bombs. I'm really digging it. It's awesome. I want to know if you'd be interested in going on tour with Stone Sour and Steel Panther. And I was like, yeah, duh. So we started collaborating on this tour. And then like that throughout that summer, you know, we were just kind of like, okay, like he's really cool and we're really like feeling each other, but it was like, nope, can't do this. We're like, we got to be professional and we're going to be on tour together. So we went on tour and then at the end of it, he was like, can I take you on a date? And I was like, after this tour? Yeah. And we went on a date after our tour.
And it was so awesome.
It's weird. Sometimes it just comes down to timing, right? Like people will be in and out of your life at different times, but a lot of times it just comes down to like when it's right. So for us, you know, he hadn't been going through his stuff and I was so focused on like, you know, my company and what I wanted to do. So we made it happen. We dated. I lived in my own apartment for a year before we moved in together. We waited like 9 months before I met his daughter. We wanted to do everything like, you know, the right way. We didn't want to push too fast or anything like that. So, so yeah, we really wanted to take things slow and really, you know, build a relationship but from a friendship. And that was really important. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And you really did feel like it was like really good timing at that point for you?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like when you come into a relationship, most of the time, you know, you really want to try and like get yourself together. So you're like two whole people becoming like one, right? But so for me, I was in a really good spot. I had, you know, great job, you know, all my stuff was in order. My career is booming. I was also a freelance makeup artist at the time. I was really happy. I was just in a really good place. And so for me, I was fine. He had, you know, his own stuff that he was really, and I think that's why like during that summer when we were first kind of like flirting with one another, the timing was not right at all. Like he, you know, was going through a huge depression. And for those that, you know, follow him, you know, you can read about his interviews and things like that. He's definitely an open book about that. And he was really needing to like find himself. And so he took the time to like, you know, I need to work on me. I need to do this for me. And then really kind of hone that in. So like during like the first part of our tour, we really didn't talk at all. We really didn't even like see each other at all or anything like that. Because he just really, I think it was really important for him to like, you know, find himself again and like, you know, do all that. And honestly, even in the beginning of our relationship, he was working really hard at that too. Taking care of himself mentally, physically, emotionally. And what I told him at the time was that, you know, it may not be great for you to jump into a relationship right now, but I'm telling you that you need to do the work for yourself but I'm also telling you that you don't have to do it alone. Like, I'm not going to do it for you. I'm not going to do any part of it. Like, you're here, but I will be your cheerleader and I'll be here for you. And I'll just kind of be that pillar of strength for you during this time, just to let you know that you're not alone. And that was kind of how we treated our relationship in the beginning. So I think that's what really worked out. And, you know, as time passed, I don't know if you've ever gone through like a really big, crazy depression or anything like that, but when you feel yourself come out of that, I mean, you can see it. It's in your skin. It's in your face. It's in, you know, it's just your friends notice that you look so much better. You know, you become so much brighter and lighter to be around. He definitely achieved that for sure. And he did a great job. I mean, he worked his ass off for his happiness, you know?
That's awesome. And something else I kind of wanted to talk to you about. So, I'm very open on this show about this, but I started the show because I wanted a way to improve my self-esteem and my confidence and just being able to talk to people. And yeah, you seem like a really confident lady, and you're just like a badass woman on stage. So like, what do you think is like the key to like, you know, achieving confidence? And because I feel like that's also an important part in, you know, relationships and friendships and stuff like that.
I think one of the best ways to gain confidence is to know yourself, like really know yourself. Like, who am I in here and what are my values and what are the things that are important to me? Once you have those things like figured out pretty well and, you know, it's clear, your actions become easy, right? So if you know, one of my biggest things is my integrity. It's something that's really important to me. So it's a no-brainer for me to do things that I feel are the right thing in that time and moment, even if it's uncomfortable. And I think when you do things that you find are uncomfortable, it helps you cope with that and it makes you a stronger person, whether that's being honest about something that maybe you're kind of embarrassed about, or maybe it's, you know, asking a question that you feel like might be too much, or maybe it's sharing how you feel about things. And that's another thing too, is allowing yourself to be vulnerable and know that it will be okay. Cause I think that's like a really hard thing for people, right? Is to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And that's it causes people to like do this and blah, blah, blah. And that can really take a hit on your confidence. So, you know, practicing like with small things at first, maybe it is something like speaking up and saying something or sharing how you feel about something with a friend that may be an uncomfortable conversation. And then when you realize that allowing yourself to be vulnerable with other people around you builds, you know, trust and relationships with people, then you feel more confident in who you are as a human. You can kind of be like your true authentic self. And once you know your authentic self, man, the sky's the limit. Then you're like, and that's hard too sometimes, right? Like people are like, oh, do what you want and fuck what everybody else says. And that's true, but getting there is tough. So practice doing things that you love to do. I'm a huge cheerleader of, hey, if you're not hurting yourself and you're not hurting anyone else, do whatever the fuck you want, you know, leave people alone. So practice that, because that's a tough thing for people, I think.
Yeah. And I'm a true believer that no one should go through this life comfortably. Like, it's great to be comfortable in life, but like, doing the show terrified me because, like, you know, just talking in front of people. And I told you I did theater in high school and that horrified me, but it was a way for me to put myself in uncomfortable situations so I could, I feel like this is helping me like find myself and everything, because I'm able to like talk to people and conversate and just get like different perspectives on life. Like, I've learned a lot about you and like the way you look at the world just from, and we've only been talking for an hour and 16 minutes.
Do you feel like the more that you do this, the easier it's getting?
Oh, absolutely. Like,
okay. Yeah.
and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but like a lot of my guests that have been on here, they're like, hey, that was a great show. I felt really comfortable with you. And I was like, good. That's kind of my goal. Like, I want it to feel like a conversation. Like I'm inspired by people like Joe Rogan and this guy, Sam Jones, that does a really cool, like, behind the scenes kind of show. And I don't know if you've heard of it. I think it's called Off Camera, but that's kind of my goal, is just to have a chill conversation. Like, I'm not trying to be these huge publications like that do interviews. I'm just trying to be cool and have it feel like you're listening to some friends have a conversation.
Yeah, I think that's really rad. And you are really good at it. Like, I would never guess that this was something that you struggled with, because it does take practice. And it is kind of weird, you know, having a conversation with, like, the world watching and, you know, mm-hmm. what do they say? What do they think, type of thing. But, I mean, you're you, and that's all you can be, right? And so once you own that, then you're good. And the people that love it will be there to support you and cheer you on. The people that don't like it, they can just go click on something else.
Yeah. And another thing that I think helps is, like, this is live. Like, I could totally record this and just put it on YouTube, but I don't cut anything. Like, nothing is cut out unless someone just says something super stupid and ridiculous in the show. I put everything on YouTube, and you've not said anything dumb, so I'm going to post it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, so I try to keep the show around an hour, and we've definitely soared past that. But like, this is, like, I've had a great time talking to you. One more story I'd love for you to talk about is the so you guys did a show in Mexico, KnotFest, I think it was called, mm-hmm. and it got completely shut down. And it's just a wild story, and I'd love to hear your perspective on it.
Yeah. So, Mexico City, and we're on stage and we're performing, doing our thing, and it's a sea of people, right? It was like 45,000 people. You can't, in a crowds like that, you can't really see what's happening. It's just a sea of humans. So, we got off stage and security came up to me and was like, "Hey, I'm just letting you know that a barricade broke and we're going to have to stop the show until it's fixed. But we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know when it's going to start back up again. But I'm just making you be aware that the barricade broke and people are just coming to the front of the stage in droves from," because I guess there were barricades in between certain ticket holders and other ticket holders. So, like, if you paid a certain amount, you could be closer to the stage. And if you paid another amount, you were a little further away from the stage. And so that's what broke. And then all these people were just rushing. And it became like a safety issue at that point, right? Because all these people are bum rushing the stage and there's no way of stopping them. And they're super stoked and excited. So they're trying to figure out how to fix this barricade. And I send my girls back to the hotel because Corey was performing later, and I decided to stay with him. So I sent my girls back to the hotel with our security. And there was like a long time passed. I want to say like over an hour or something like that passed. And you could feel it in the air that people were getting restless. And nobody went on stage to tell the audience like what was happening. Nobody went on there to be like, "Hey, you know, this is what's happening. If everybody could just stay calm," or whatever, for a long time. I want to say it was over an hour until somebody finally addressed the issue with the crowd. Cause the crowd doesn't know what's happening. They just know that nothing's going on stage and they're just standing around, you know, dicking around. So then people seem to be okay. And then nothing was happening for like another hour or so. And you could feel people getting restless again. And now they're angry. Now they're chanting. You can tell that they're just like, "What the fuck is going on?" Because they don't have any information really given to them. So we waited around for probably another 30, 45 minutes. So at this point, total time is almost 3 hours. And finally, they were like, now it's beyond an issue of just the barricade. Now it's an actual safety issue because the crowd is extremely restless. They're angry. And now they're peeing in beer bottles and chucking them on the stage. Like, yeah. So now they're like angry. So it was beyond that at that point. And so they finally called in and were like, man, this just isn't safe. Let's see if we can resume tomorrow. So we went back to the hotel, and all night, you know, everybody's trying to figure out, like, how can we push everything over tomorrow? How can we, like, make this right? And Cherry Bombs, we were set to perform both days. So I'm like, yeah, like, we'll go tomorrow. Fuck yeah, let's do this. And so the next morning, I went down to the venue to do a walkthrough and check it out. And one of our silks was damaged. And, you know, I was watching it as it happened online that night, right? Like, all the drum kit was set on fire and cables were being pulled up and piano was being pushed off the stage. It was just really sad. And so the next day I went to see what was going on. One of our silks had gotten damaged. Some of our wardrobe was missing. And it was just... it just was not a good situation at that point, I don't think, really. And so, and we talk about it in Girl Gang too. We do cover this. But my girls were kind of like, you know, we feel a little uneasy about this. And so that's all I needed to hear. Whether or not, like, I was ready to go perform, if any one of my girls feel uncomfortable, I'm not going to make them do something, you know, that they don't really want to do. So, so I said, fine, we'll go ahead and can it too. So, so we canceled, unfortunately, but yeah, but I'd love to come back to Mexico because the people are amazing. They're great. Killer audience, man. Unfortunately, just a few people can ruin it for everybody. And that's, I think, what happened.
That's insane. I can't believe, like, I would be pissed if I bought a ticket and just, like, a couple people decided to be stupid.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks, especially when it's to that extent that it can, you know, stop a festival like that. But, you know, unfortunately, just a couple of reckless people can change everything for everyone, and everyone else suffers. So it sucks. So don't be a dick.
That's the moral of today's story.
Don't be a dick. Yeah, that's it.
Well, Alicia, I'm going to end the show with us going through the comments, and then I'm gonna have you plug in all your stuff.
All right.
So let's go through the comments. Let's see. Actually, let me go over here. Lots of hi, Alicia's. OMG, Alicia, so beautiful. You're amazing. Rock and metal are amazing. You need to visit New Jersey.
Yes.
Hello, Alicia from Montreal in Canada.
Hey.
Hello to the Queen. How's Corey and Scrappy doing?
Good. I got Scrappy right here.
Oh, let's see him.
I gotta see him.
Oh.
Here's Scrappy. Yep. Happy. Chonky.
Happy Scrappy.
Happy Scrappy.
How old is he?
He's five.
Oh.
He's five. And he's a rescue. And he's like the best dog ever.
What a cutie.
Yeah. He's cool.
More You're So Beautiful's new book. Did you say you were writing a new book earlier?
No. Corey's working on a new book. So.
Yes, Corey is.
Yeah.
Do you like Metallica?
I do. And one of my new solo pieces is to a Metallica song, so I'm really excited.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier, so that answers that question. Do you ship to Australia?
I do. Right now, I've been having really weird issue with international shipments. Items haven't been making it to people, so I've been trying to change to a new format for merchandise. And I think I'm going to go through DHL now so that we have actual confirmation of it getting to the right hands. So, but yes, we do.
Nice. This guy says, Bruh, Alicia Taylor, as in married to Corey Taylor. And then I guess I answered it, and then it said, okay, thanks for clarifying.
He like wandered in here. He's like, who's this?
I like to think so. Let's see. Here's a story. My sister worked at a hotel behind the desk. The whole band Stone Sour stayed in the hotel on the tour, and she said they were the nicest guys ever. So I visited her at work and got to say hi. It was really neat.
Aw, they are. Nice. They are the nicest guys.
Really?
Yes.
Do you work with any meanies at all?
Do I work with any meanies? Yeah. Or do I run into meanies? Like as far as like artists go?
Sure. Is there anyone you were just like, uh-oh, she
But like one time we were opening for this band and the singer of it like stopped at our dressing room and he was like, hey girls. We were like, hi. And he was like, I just want you to know, I hope you have a good show. And then he walked up to each one of us and like grabbed the back of our head and like kissed us on the forehead. Like he like, I don't know, it was really bizarre. Like he like blessed us or something. He was like, come here, come here. And we were like,
what?
We were all just like frozen. He like walked out and we were like, okay, thank you.
All right, bye.
Yeah, okay, bye.
Let's see. My fiance is a huge fan of Corey Taylor. Let's see. My friend Chase commented, said, my boy just said meanies. And I do regretfully have to report that I said the word meanies. I don't know why I said that. Was she ever nervous going on stage for the first time doing a Cherry Bomb show? Were you ever nervous?
Our first time doing a Cherry Bomb show was in Sturgis, South Dakota, the world's largest motorcycle rally. And our first show was with Vince Neil. And yeah, I was super nervous. There's a lot of people and it was rad, but yeah, but it was fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay. Well, Alicia, thank you so much for being on. Time for you to plug in everything. Where can we find, you know, Cherry Bomb's merch, where you guys are going on tour whenever, you know, all this stuff is over? Where can we find all that?
Well, whenever we go on tour again, not sure when, but we are going to go on tour again when all of this settles down. Mm-hmm. You can go to our website at cherrybombs.co, cherrybombs.co. You can find us on Instagram at cherrybombsofficial and on Twitter at cherrybombsrock. So we'll post show dates, audition dates, merchandise, all that fun stuff there.
Awesome. Well, Alicia, thank you so much. And thank you everybody for watching. I think this is an awesome episode. Be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel. I post all my episodes on there the day after I go live. So it's youtube.com/portabletrevor. That's where you can find everything. You can follow me on Twitter, on Instagram. Everything is Portable Trevor. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed the show and hope you have a blessed day.
Thank you so much for having me, Trevor. Thank you. Thanks everybody for watching.